trình phát thanh dành cho đồng bào Việt Nam ở xa tổ quốc. Chương trình phát thanh cho đồng bào Việt Nam. Chương trình dành cho đồng bào Việt Nam ở xa.
Good. Right. Welcome to the Xin Chào Homie podcast. We have a very fabulous episode for you. It's our Pri edition, and yeah, it's gonna be a fun one. So first, let's meet our panel. First, we have the a core member of the Ha Hanoi Comedy Collective. Please welcome Lê Kim Thanh.
Hey guys, I'm Thanh from Ha Hanoi.
And then we have an emerging talent on the Saigon comedy scene. Please welcome Jack Nguyen.
Yeah. Jake.
And hey. Also joining us is our special guest. She can turn open mic nights into open relationships. And she has opened for multiple international acts. And she recently clinched silver in the All Vietnam Comedy Competition. Please welcome Kelso Dowling, everyone.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Jack. Yeah, my pronouns are they, them. But I didn't mention that, so.
Great. How are you guys doing? How are you, Kelso?
Yes.
How are you doing, Kim?
I don't see Kelso on the screen.
Oh, I can hear you.
Yes.
Okay, so how are you doing?
Oh, good. Thank you. I'm okay. We are in about 3 months of lockdown in Saigon, so definitely getting into some new activities.
Yeah. And Jack and Tanya, you guys are also in lockdown at the moment back home?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, and if Saigon is the third month, so Hanoi is just the first day. Always lower than Saigon.
Yeah. Always catching up to Saigon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully things will get better. We're just gonna go into our first section. So this one about you, Kelso. So first question. Before you moved to Vietnam, when did you find out who you really are? Like, basically, how did you come out?
I was like, gee, how did I find? I'm still finding out who I am. Before I came here, I was in, I call my home Washington, D.C. That's where I was before Saigon. I didn't come out, I guess, to my maybe my family until I was around 26, like 26 years old. Some people would say that's kind of late, but I think it happened when it was supposed to.
And when did you move to Vietnam, and what led you to that decision?
So I actually had left DC to go to travel. So I was backpacking for 6 months around Southeast Asia. I knew I was going to live somewhere, but I actually didn't know where when I left. I was just like, I'm going to travel and figure out the scene and pick where I wanted to go. And I just had a family friend that lived in Hanoi. And I had spent the prior 5.5 months traveling to all these places and being thinking that was going to be the best way to pick somewhere. And then I ended up picking Hanoi, and I hadn't even gone there yet. So I don't know what that choice was, but I did it.
Yeah. And did you start comedy in Vietnam or in DC?
I did. I started in DC. I had wanted to try stand up comedy for like 6 years. And I studied theater in university. I had a theater background, but I had never done stand up before. So it took me about 6 years until I decided to take a class. I took a stand up 101 class in DC. And then my first 5-minute set was a part of that class, and I did my first 5 minutes. I performed in DC maybe 5 or 6 times before I left.
Right, right. And and then you continue when you move to Hanoi.
Yes. So then I didn't, so in my time of traveling, didn't do anything. I moved to Hanoi. I was actually looking for a place to live, and I was staying at a hostel that had a stand-up comedy show, which is called 7 Fridays in Hanoi. Uh-huh. And I was staying there. Yeah. And there was a sign up for a stand-up show, and I was like, what? No way. Like, there's a stand-up show here. What is this? Is there a scene? Like, I had no idea what I was getting into. And so I think I ended up talking to the owner of, or the manager or something, saying, what is this? Who do I talk to? And then I ended up sending a message to Dan Dockery.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Which was kind of like the big leagues, in like maybe the stand up top, like, he doesn't do anything really with the local scene, aside from like support it quite a lot, but not running the shows or anything. So I had just sent him a message, and he was like, calm down there, Tiger. Here's who you need to talk to.
Yeah, that's great. And yes, and you were there for what, how long were you in Hanoi?
I was in Hanoi for almost 2 years, a little less than 2 years. And yeah, I just jumped right in. I jumped also into improv down there with Tang. And yeah, that's how we met actually. And I just remember wanting to do all these things that I wanted to take time for, and I just did it in the first probably month that I lived in Hanoi. I just jumped into everything. I was like, what else can I do?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And you definitely try to stay active and try to connect with people and engage as much as possible in the local scene. And, and so, and at that point, you already came out, right? When you were in Hanoi. So, what was it like just being an LGBT expat living in Vietnam?
Yeah, I guess I'd say like a lot of my, I think before I moved here or to Vietnam, I had done sort of the work on like coming to terms with my sexuality. So I was really comfortable with it already. Living really anywhere. Like I was comfortable with that. I felt like I'd explored it. And I don't, like, this is not really something I think about too often. I think, I guess it's when I teach English here, and maybe when my students are like, are you a boy or a girl? And I always say yes. So. I think now I've had to come out so many times in my journey that like the first one was sort of just like the sexuality, and now I'm on like a gender journey that I think I just think this coming out, it's almost just like keeps happening. So when you're like, when did you come out? I'm like, when? Which time?
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine it will be quite tricky when you're like filling out, like dealing with bureaucracy, filling out or doing the paperwork. And just like.
Yeah. Yeah. That happened to me here because I went to, get tested, like an STI clinic. Just a routine, y'all. Just a routine. And I specifically, there was actually a clinic down here that was recommended to me from one of my queer friends here. Specifically because on that, on their forms, I could put trans, and I could put that, on my medical forms that I filled out. And that was really important to me. So, yeah, just those types of things, I guess. Mm.
Yeah. And also, when did you move to Saigon?
I moved in November of 2020. Yeah.
Right. And so what led to that decision?
I have thoughts of moving to sort of like a different scene. I grew up, my dad was in the military, and I moved every 3 years of my life growing up. And I think kind of like just moving after a couple years or 3 years is just kind of very normal for me. And so I think I was started to get that itch in Hanoi. I had just gotten out of a relationship. I was getting really into comedy, focusing more on like my writing and wanting to get better, wanting more stage time, stuff like that. And always just like appreciate all different parts of a country, north, south, in between. So I just decided to take the trip.
Yeah, take the trip. Mm. Yeah, and do you feel that? What think are the, like the major differences between Hanoi and Saigon, like based on your experience, you know, beyond the
beyond it could the get less than friendly sometimes.
Yes. Just being real. Okay. Beyond the stereotypes, I feel like I have to address those though, and this is also coming from a foreigner perspective because I feel like I learned so much when I left Hanoi, and.
Yeah,
just about, I mean, I knew that there was sort of this, like, I'm going to say friendly rivalry between,
I want to hear it.
I'm going to say again. Hands are up. Hold my hands up.
It's fine. We're all cool here, so yeah, we're
friends. Generally, I had like such an interesting experience because I feel like I knew about this, and I felt like in Hanoi, I didn't really hear about Saigon like too much in Hanoi. It was just kind of like. Wasn't a thing. And then when I came to Saigon, it was like the first thing everyone asked me. I'm like, I just moved here from Hanoi. And they're like, which one's better? Like, immediately. Just like,
so
everyone.
Competitive. So competitive.
Yeah.
It's like a Jack sexy thing.
Knows exactly what I'm talking about. Because when I first came down here, so I met Jack like maybe my first 2 weeks. And honestly, it had become the first 10 minutes of my like new set moving to Saigon because I couldn't ignore it. Like and people were so like, they would dig into you. Even within like the expat community, there was like this whole like, you want to, Saigon's better, like say it. And I'm like, whoa, like just chill out. It was wild. It was just like, but anyway, that was just my experience coming down here. I'd say the differences overall, and again, this is just from, you know, my experience and the things that I could do in Hanoi, like a lot of the things that I wanted to experience or like, you know, stages I could perform or things that I could go to, were in sort of this bubble of from one place to another was like, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes max to get somewhere. And it was a straight line. And within that straight line probably existed every place that I was going to go to in Hanoi for these types of like events or anything that I would do. And then in Saigon, it's just like, it's over here, it's over there, it's down there, it's up here, it's this way. I'm like 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 20. It's just, this city is so giant and it feels like it's all around me. I always feel like I'm learning new parts of the city constantly.
Yeah, it's something to, there's always something new to discover.
Yeah, but also that's, I guess I get sensitive myself about even saying this because it's not like Hanoi is not small. It's a giant city. But what was in my sector of like where I would go to perform, where things were, like I could be on a stage performing in English, was like, yeah, this line that I already talked about. So I'm going to shut up.
This line, yes. And what do you think of the comedy scene between what do you think of the comedy scene between Hanoi and Saigon?
Everyone's laughing. I really like them both. I really love them both. I am so appreciative and like my heart. And so much of what I've learned, like I'm still learning so much, but I'd say my like Hanoi gave that to me. And I am really thankful for that scene that was there. I know I keep talking about size, but it really is. It was a smaller community. It was like a lot more tight knit. So, I mean, the way we did shows down there was a Facebook Messenger and everybody was on it. That right. was in it. Versus Saigon, it's done so much differently because there's just more space. There's more venues. There's like different scenes that are down here that need to be run by certain other individuals. And that's really amazing too. It's just, yeah, it's just really different.
Yeah, but I guess, you know, Hanoi provided you with the foundation, which allowed you to succeed in the Saigon scene.
Totally. Oh my gosh, yeah, absolutely. I learned so much. I learned so much there.
And when you got second place in the All Vietnam Comedy Competition, was that in Hanoi or was that?
At the time, it was in Hanoi, yeah. Yeah.
Ooh, and that's great. And what was it like?
I guess what was the competition like?
Yeah, what was it? What was the final like? Just the final.
Oh my gosh. I mean, even to right now, my favorite place ever to perform at is Standing Bar in Hanoi. And yeah, that will not change. Because also that actually doesn't, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there is not a venue here that's specifically just for stand-up comedy. Like, this venue in Hanoi was built for stand-up.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And so, yeah, the competition was at this place. It's like being able to perform in a space that's meant for this art. And, you know, people get really excited about it. Your friends come. Of course, the nerves are high. I'm always nervous before I go on stage, and I definitely forgot 2 minutes of my 7-minute set. I forgot 2 minutes, yeah. I was so upset with myself. But it still was good. It was, it was a really, really amazing, amazing experience.
Yeah, that's great. I do miss the standing bar. Yeah, what a play, what a venue.
Yeah.
Yes. So I think and you know, you were doing comedy, you were still performing in Saigon before the lockdown happened, right? And you you were still quite active in that scene.
In Hanoi or Saigon?
Saigon.
Oh yes. I don't even know where I live anymore. I've been in the same room for so long. Hello. Yes. So I moved down here, and I had actually met, so the same time I met you, and because we performed with Tommy T.
Oh, yeah.
And I had met, and I also was with Jawanza and Booming Too. I had met them and were, I'd say, acquaintances at this point, maybe like performers together. I don't really know what that relationship's called, but so I had messaged and to Tommy P, and I had sent a message to Jawanza to say I was moving down here, and who do I need to talk to? Where do I need to go? So they helped me out a lot. I went to an open mic when I first moved out, probably within the first like 3 days I was in Saigon. And I went to did an open mic, and yeah, the rest just kind of followed with, okay, more open mics. Maybe some showrunners said that they needed to see me before they could put me on a show. So then they would come to open mics. Yeah.
Right, that's cool. Yeah. So because you mentioned a few things about your sexual gender identity. We're just gonna move into the next part of this episode. So just more about the things to do with the LGBTI+ in Vietnam and. Tan and Jack, you can chip in as well. What do you think of this? What's your overall impression of like the community in Vietnam? If you ever had any chance to interact with them,
I did. You know, when I was in Hanoi, I did like a queer movie night. And pride is very much alive, and we'd have individuals that was from within the community that would come and join us. There was a pride, like I went to Pride in Hanoi, the Pride parade and everything, and I felt like it's very much, I mean, from my experience, and also, I think might be behind a different lens, but it was, it was open, but also from individual conversations I have, maybe not so open. I think it really just probably depends on the scenario.
Yeah. But you think. By the way, Jack, can you hear us?
Hello, Jack. Ơi. Oh.
Right. Okay. And Tan.
Yeah.
Tan, okay. How much of like what's your impression of the whole like situation with the LGBT community in Vietnam?
I think it's really cool. Like the why, because like I have the friends who work for the Pride that Castle mentioned. Like they're really professional about the kind of like events for LGBTQ that community here. Like for the Pride Month, they have like the whole department of communications and those kind of stuff. And like, I'm not LGBT, but like I talk to my friends and I learn a lot from them. But like, also I think because like I'm kind of like young generation, so like I can talk to them really openly. I have a lot of friends who are in the LGBT community, and like I heard some story about they coming out, like even the funny one, because like one of my close friend, like he kissed his boyfriend like in the corner of the street, and at that time his father kind of like passed by and he just accidentally saw the two guys, and like the father kind of like invited the two guys for tea in the house, and like they talk really normally and stuff. And I think it's really cool. I think like it's like they are people, and I don't see any kind of like necessity to treat them differently.
That's cool. Yeah, definitely there's I guess there's been a lot of progress being made.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of progress being made in the last few years, so regarding the community there. And but what do you think are like the ongoing issues? And this is like this is an open question for all of you.
Mm. I mean, I don't know for the expat community. Maybe like Kelso can talk more about that. But for the Vietnamese people, maybe like some still have the kind of like issues of traditional beliefs. That like you still have to marry and have children and those kind of stuff. So that's, I can imagine that it will be a huge kind of like burden or pressure on those one who's in the community and have to kind of like explain themselves to people that who they are. I think it's the biggest one.
Yeah. What about you, Jack?
Okay, well, I prefer to call them the Alphabet Mafia, first of all. And, about progress, like, you know, we are a very conservative country, like, you know, and I feel like that is changing soon, not radically, but I see change. I have a longtime friend. He is a queer activist, and he is a drag queen. You know, the people in the Saigon drag community might know him as Babel. So, yeah, so Babel from Gender Funk, you know, and there's Gender Funk, there's like drag houses here. It's not super popular, but, it is definitely gaining momentum. And yeah, and you know, widespread recognition, of, you know, the Alphabet Mafia here. Well, there's definitely pride. I don't partake in that, but, there is pride being organized, I think, the last month. And, yeah, you know, so Babel does things like he works for the organization that, you know, NextGen and, many others that, you know, help promote and produce these sort of like events and, just raise money to support, queer artists and, queer, just people in general, I guess. But there's, despite a lot of these efforts, I still feel that, especially older people, they're still like a lot more conservative. And, you know, it's a special thing that I notice that, you know, on TV, gay people are generally portrayed as, very feminine, like even more feminine than, you know, women. And, you know, they're just portrayed as sassy and like mean and like just, a lot of, you know, negative stereotypes are being, you know, put on TV and stuff like that. So, of course, the older people, they would definitely watch TV more and they would start to form a clear idea of, you know, what gay people look like. So, so representation wise, it's not super helping. I mean, I know there are people who are like that. And I even know some gay people who act like that because that's what they see on TV. But, I don't really think that there's, you know, actual representation of queer people that are like the queer people that I meet daily. You know, it's kind of very exaggerated and it's just like, it's not chill. And I hope y'all would agree when I say this, but most queer people in Vietnam here, we're chill. We're not like super high strung, like, you know, some are, but that's totally okay. But I don't want that to be like the only type of gay that you see on TV. Give me all the gays. You know what I'm saying?
Good to know.
Can I add something? Cause like, yeah, because like I'm one of the organizers of TEDx Hanoi. So like, for the TEDx event last year, we have a speaker, who is the founder of the Queer Film Festival. So, they talk in they say in the speech that, why like, the image of like queer people in the movies and drama series always the one who kind of like sassies and like act like this, but like they are normal people too, and why they have to be the main character, best friends, but not the main character.
I know,
you see what I mean, like yeah,
yeah.
They're always some kind of like sassy friends. You can see more in the Thai film maybe. But like, it's something that going on here, even in the film industry.
It's definitely spawned a lot of, you know, negative stereotypes because I'm sorry. One of my biggest pet peeves is just like, you know, when somebody finds out that I am queer, I don't even tell them. I don't even believe in coming out. But when somebody knows, and they're just like, hey, girlfriend, wanna do shopping? Wanna do shopping with me? We could do nails together. Does anal hurt? Does it hurt because I wanna try with my boyfriend? But anyway, we could talk it over at Starbucks. Wanna go to Starbucks? And it's just like, verbatim, every time. Oh, God. It is.
I love you, Jack.
I can't deal sometimes.
But Jack, tell me, you would go to Starbucks if I asked you to get out.
Yes, but I mean, Starbucks isn't bad. I would go for the food.
Yeah, I think,
but,
yeah. Jack made it really good.
I feel like the coffee at Circle K might be better. I don't know. I just drink coffee there every day.
Okay. But yeah, anyway, yeah, so, you know, Jack and Tan made a very good point about, you know, representation, just the whole typecasting with gay typecasting gay characters, the idea they're always the best friend, but they're always the supporting characters, but never the main characters. You know, the idea is the idea of like always the prize mates, not the bride.
I know. When you put it like that, I'm like, well, I'm okay with not being the bride. But I hear you.
But yeah, and anyway, also Tan and especially in within Vietnam, we do within the Vietnamese language, we have like certain terms for people within that particular community, like slangs. What are some of those slangs?
I think maybe like the most used one is the bede.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I think like maybe like the uncles, aunts, or like grandpas, grandmoms use that also. Like it's the word that works for every generation here. If you say that, they will understand that we're talking about queer people. I think it's from the French word pede. So maybe like they adapt it from the French colonial time or something like that. But I think it's the most common one here for the word.
Yeah. Speaking of that, so you mentioned it came from French. So the full word is pederasty, if I can remember. Which implies a relationship of sexual nature between an adolescent and an older man. So.
Oh.
So. So Jack, we were talking about Vietnamese slangs for LGBT. Do you have any?
Okay, let's see. We have many, okay? So first of all, we have bede, and there's variations. There's bede, and there's like BD, and there's 3D, and then we have, we have bóng, which is like just basic, it's derived from the word đồng bóng in Vietnamese, because there are like shamans, I don't know but these shamans are usually queer and they do these little dances as like, you know, they serve as a conduit. I don't know if it's the right word also, but like they are basically queer people who do these dances and then people believe that they could talk to spirits and stuff. And, that's the word that's called, đồng bóng. But like, you know, now gay people, the slang is called just bóng, I guess, and there are variations of that too. Like, you know, there's many, like bóng chúa, bóng chó, bóng dơ, bóng nhi đồng, bóng lộn. It's so many, and like, each of these prefixes mean something. I'm fucking dying.
It's fine. You know, we're learning so much. But yeah, coming back to your point about bóng. Yeah, so you mentioned there are people who engage in religious ceremony, and that particular religion faith is called the mother goddess Đà Mẫu in Vietnam. Yeah. And those people are basically a medium, because they can. So hence why they're able to communicate with the dead. The medium.
I wish I could talk to the dead, but yeah, that's not in my gay. It's not in the gay superpower starter kit, you know. At least not in mine.
You are missing out.
Is this what gay people do? They see through walls. I can't.
Kels, I hope you're taking as much as possible from all this information.
That's the key word for you.
The key word. The wonderful queer world in Vietnam.
I want to say something. It's funny because bao means like gay in Vietnam, but it also means like it could mean a bubble or a ball. So like, you know, when people there's this common like you know, situation where it's like people say gay bao, and it means like it means play ball, like you could hang out with the bros and like do, you know, soccer or football, or you could or you could be performing like anal sex, or I don't know.
Play ball. Okay.
Play with balls, I guess.
The post game. Yeah, the post game shower.
Hey. Play ball.
Play ball. Not those kind of balls.
I guess.
Here for
it makes
it.
Sense in both languages. Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Oh yeah, no, I'm here for it.
Yeah, and also like, but the funny thing, right? So when I was little, like when I hear the word bomb, because bomb can also means shiny. So it's, I don't know, maybe
yeah,
has something to do with you know, gay people being quite bright. You know, like little
flamboyant
have nice skin. You know, is it
yeah.
Flamboyant?
Yeah.
They get good care. Very good skincare routine.
Honestly.
Oh, but don't forget that bóng also means shadow.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, this is why Vietnamese are so hard. You're like, but wait. Shiny, but also shadow. But also butt, but also ball.
Yeah.
Yes.
So honestly, people will call me things, and I'm like,
You know, it's a very fluid word. You know what I mean? Like very translucent.
I love it. I'm here for it. It's just my memory may not be.
Cool. Yeah, definitely. And so definitely there's a, you know, obviously the Vietnamese language is quite diverse within in different in reference to the various sexual identities. And we have made a lot of progress in the last decade or so, and at the same time there are issues with representation. I think this leads us into the final part of this episode that I was just going to do a bit of a quick queer chat. So the first topic is queer historical figures you want to invite on your podcast. Why don't we start with Kelso?
Ooh, gosh. I feel like I would definitely want to talk to Sylvia Rivera threw the first brick at Stonewall and started what is now Pride. But I also think, no, there's no buts. That would absolutely happen. I feel like I'd also want to talk to not just historical figures, like who's in the now?
Yeah. Yeah, so who at the moment, like who would you invite in terms of who's in the now?
I personally, I mean, since I'm going on, maybe in the future when we look back, they'll become these like historical figures or leading researchers or something like that. But there are these two authors I follow, Alex Yantafi and Meg John Barker. And I just think that their research on gender and the binary would be, on my particular podcast, something I would want to delve into with these two.
That sounds cool. And Tan, what about you? Who would you invite on your podcast?
Let's see. Kelso.
Hey! Oh my gosh. Stop. What a compliment. I can't even.
Yeah.
So red right now.
Honestly, let's see. Maybe like the poet that you put on the screen. Cause like, I'm really curious about him. I mean like, in the textbook from high school, we have, a kind of like, love poem from Sun Ziyo. He's one of the most famous creole in my textbook. So I really want to talk to him, like, how's his life back then and like, yeah, everything.
Yeah, he was in the shadow for a bit, you know, and a bit of a
in the shadow, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I do enjoy his poetry, especially the use of metaphors, you know what I mean.
It's really romantic one, really nice one.
Yeah. And Jack, what about you? Who would you invite on your podcast?
I would invite multiple. I mean, does historical count old or like dead? Like,
both. I mean, as long as in the past. They...
Okay. Well, of course, Anderson Cooper, for no other reason than his looks. He's a total silver fox. And so he's alive. And also, Alan Turing, also because he's hot and also he's smart. So, you know, what that brain do. And it could do a lot of things. And we are going, and we're definitely going to talk about, you know, like how stupid it was that he received chemical castration for literally being gay. Like, you know, this, they give him some sort of like negative Viagra to like decrease his sexuality. And that's like, first of all, that's fucked up. Okay. And Marsha P. Johnson would agree. And I will also have her on my podcast. And we will be talking shit like hours on end. That's a fact. All right. And also just who, and Britney Spears, she's not queer, I think, no, but she is an icon nevertheless, and we want her freed, and we want her to like talk shit about her dad, because the best people I know hate their family, so I have a feeling that Britney is a blast to be around.
Can you imagine that, like, in one podcast, and we invite all the people that we just mentioned?
Oh my god!
It should be called the Tea Room.
Also, yeah. Jack, baby, write that line down. That's hilarious. All the best people I know hate their families.
that's the highlight of this episode.
That's a golden one.
Oh, and we will have the Vietnamese poet write all the line down and train it.
Oh my god! Yeah, and also a fun fact: Anderson Cooper actually studied Vietnamese at the National University in Hanoi.
Damn! Ooh, okay.
So Jack, you can teach him a few more things, you know, some of those slangs, some of the words you mentioned earlier.
No way.
Damn, that's cool. I didn't know that. Hey.
That's great. A wide range of historical figures, and the only criteria that we will let them in is the only criteria that we invite them is that they hate their family. According to Jack.
Yes.
Yes, and also hashtag free Britney.
Free Britney.
Right.
Yeah, so, okay, and let's move to our next topic. Unusual ways to come after your Vietnamese parents. Okay, Jack, why don't you start us with that?
Okay, well, I do not believe in coming out. I'm just like, if straight people don't gotta do that shit, then I don't either. Okay, like, I'm just gonna walk in one day and, like, you know, with a ring on my finger and, you know, and my husband. That's it. And if they don't like it, we will go somewhere else with better food. And because I'm just being real, my dad is like not the best cook. So like, you know, I can't have him talk shit and then make me shit food at the same time. It's no, I cannot deal. So I am going to a restaurant with my new thing, my new boy toy or husband or whatever. And so be it. You know, if he doesn't like it. And if he does, that's cool. I really couldn't care less because I am this is the person I'm going to start my life with without you. So, I didn't even come here for your approval. Like, I just needed to get my old shit so that we could move to our new house, our new apartment. Okay.
I mean, I imagine that's a movie right there.
Yeah, I'm just coming to get my old shit.
Like, no, I didn't come here for your fucking listen. I'm already married, and I just came here to get my old shit. And then I'm going to dick.
Oh, God. The right person asked.
That's a good.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just needed to get my stuff. I'm going to pull a big-ass 40-inch dildo from under my bed. It's like, all right, that's the rest of it. I'm going to go.
Oh, my God. Right. Like, the office jacket open, like...
thank you for that, Jack. Very, very visual. Anyway, Kelso, how would you come out to Vietnamese parents?
Vietnamese parents. I would hide. No, I'm just kidding. I could answer it for my own parents. Actually, no, what I will share is, so I have a brother, I have two brothers, but one of my brothers, is also gay, and he came out, first, but he told me later, my mom was driving him to the airport, and he said, "I'm gay, bye," and then went.
That should be your closing line. Like, every time you do a set, like, "I'm gay, bye."
So I was like, oh, yeah, amazing. Just like, and he had to go. My mom's like, "Wait, what?" No questions. I was like, honestly, Kyle, that was genius. Yeah.
That's great. What hero. And Tan, how would you come out to Vietnamese parents?
I think I would do as my friend in the story that I mentioned before, just make out with my partner in front of the door, and when my parents open the door, they see it. Oh, okay, so I see.
I love that.
It's just simple. Simple. Great, yeah. So,
hey, you still want to come in for dinner?
Yeah. If you are a good cook, or but
they look like good friends.
Times. Yeah, I would join Jack in the restaurant.
Yes, you are invited.
Thank you. Like, I really on Jack's side for this, because like, I think queer people are normal people. So like, when we come out, it has to be when we kind of like introduce the partner to the parents, like normal couple. I mean, normal, like, in the conservative way.
Yeah. Mm. I really think that you don't even know that your child is straight until he brings his girlfriend home. So it's like, you know, it's kind of fair game, because like, you know, bringing your girlfriend home as a male is like coming out to your parents that you're straight. So just do the opposite and it's okay.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And also just to normalize the experience.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't owe it to anybody to tell them that. So, you know, it's like, miss me with that, you know, like, why didn't you tell me?
I didn't have to.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, also, if you have kind of like Vietnamese parents that you want to come out to, maybe you can learn the Vietnamese word bong first.
Okay, so here's the thing, Mom. Dad, caretakers. This is what I go by now. I'm this only. Bong.
Bong. Yes. Perfect pronunciation.
Shiny shadow.
Oh my gosh, that would be my video game name, whatever game I'm in. Shiny shadow. Oof, love that.
Fantastic. Yeah, well, yeah, I think the overarching message is just stay true to yourself, just be true to yourself, and everything will work out. Yeah, so, and,
like, if all else fails, get on an airplane.
Right, so, and, okay, and our next topic is things you don't say to a drag queen. Jack, why don't you start us, for us again?
Well, I am friends with a drag queen, and I literally lived with a drag queen once, and I still kind of don't know, like, what not to say to them, because I never, like, pissed off a drag queen, you know? Well, I did call one old ones, but that's because, you know, well, he kept calling me fat, so, like, he started it. And secondly, like, you know, he was only 26 and he got mad at me saying, like, you know, you're fucking prehistoric, walking with the T-Rex's ass, trying to come from me being fat. But, you know, that, I guess that's like a common thing though. Like, you don't tell anybody they're old unless you attacked first. But like, I can't really think of anything specific not to say to a drag queen. Like, you know, you were untucked, I guess. Like, tucking is like, you know, when they tuck their dick behind their legs before a performance so it won't show, because usually they have these tight suits they perform in. So like, you know, after a performance, I guess you don't say that you were untucked or like you were detucked during the performance. I guess because I guess it's embarrassing. But if the package is big, so like they're accidentally flaunting it too, so it's not super bad.
Okay, no, don't care. Okay, don't call them old.
What you got out of that?
Right. Anyway, and what about you, Kelso? What you don't say to a drag queen?
Oh my gosh, you know, if it's something that you shouldn't say, I would just say, don't say it. Because in the drag queen world, honestly, drag queens are like professional roasters. Like, they roast, that's their style. I shouldn't say that. I don't want to speak for all drag queens. But I have seen a lot of drag queen shows where a lot of it's like roasting. So, and it can get pretty brutal. Like, I've been to shows where I'm like, oh my God, I'm so uncomfortable right now, but also in a safe space, so it feels good. So I just wouldn't even challenge. Like, if it's something you shouldn't, I would only say, yes, get it. You got it, girl. You rock. Love. I would speak all positive because I would never want to get into any speaking battle with a drag queen because I would cry.
Yeah. Okay. So, right. So basically, yeah, don't say anything or you get roasted.
Unless you're paying compliments.
Yeah. I agree. Don't say anything except compliment.
Yeah. What about you, Tan?
I agree with Kelso because, like, I went to some drag queen events a few times, and like, I have the impression that, like, they really roast you and like really strong, and they can beat me up anytime I say something wrong. So, yeah, I just say compliments, and yeah, I feel they're wonderful for sure. Honestly, so like. Yeah. I don't want anything to kind of like harm the atmosphere of the night.
Including my myself.
You don't want to be harmed, you know. Stay on safe.
I can imagine, yeah, I can imagine if someone says like, maybe for example, you should shave or like do some bad comments on the makeup or something. Maybe they could get really angry and pissed off. Yeah.
You don't want to do that. Even if their hair or makeup is janky or like caked on, don't. But just my experience living and like being friends with drag queens, like I've never done anything to like piss them off. So that's why. And also I have been like, you know, of course I hang out with them. I'm running with the wolves. So like if a drag queen ever comes for me, I wouldn't be afraid. I would not be afraid. Because I have learned from the best. I have learned from them, among them. So.
I mean, honestly, yeah. I run with the wolves too. I still
I'm not sassy. I just do it for defense.
Oh, Jack.
Why suck?
Really hardens it's, you know, being in that environment.
Yes, like it's you know, it's one of the gay survival skills. Not cooking, not driving, not doing math, but you know how to roast and you are set for life as a gay person. It's basic life skills, and I think somebody needs to open a master class on that. How to read a bitch for filth. Maybe I should run that class.
Yeah. And it has definitely made you a better comedian, I imagine.
Yeah, I guess.
Right, so I think the central message for this one is just don't say anything. Just praise them. Praise, you know.
Yeah, honestly, I mean it too. I'm like, hell yeah, yeah, get up there, do your thing.
Yeah, dude. Woo! Yeah, you go. Yes, queen.
You got it.
You got it. Just don't hurt me, please. So definitely. And thanks, guy, for your contribution. Anyway, before we leave, Kelso, can you just tell us what are your plans for the future? What does the future hold for you?
Oh my God, you sound like the people I just interviewed with for a job.
Sounds like a coaching session.
My heart just dropped to the floor. My palms are sweating. Oh my God, they're like, what's your 5-year plan? I'm like, am I supposed to have one of those?
Yeah. Well, once the lockdown's over and, you know, post-pandemic, let's just say that.
Yeah, I Oh gosh, I don't know. I can say I plan on being here as long as I can, and I'd like to get better at writing, like perform more, take more workshops. I'd say maybe, okay, a future goal is to have a solid hour long set that I'm happy about.
I think that's a really good goal, and also good, and we hope hoping we could see that once all of this blows over.
Yeah, thanks. Please come. I hope that the three of you are there. So it's, at least I'll have three audience members.
Nah,
Three.
your show will be packed.
Yeah,
Oh,
back
thanks.
and
Your
Jack
show.
can open for you.
I would love
I will
that.
shout like 10 people.
Yes, okay, we got it.
Yeah, so yeah, you guys watch out for Kelso solo show. Hopefully in the next hopefully soon enough. And Kelso, what are your so and how can we find you on social media?
Oh, yes. I'm most active on Instagram, which is at It's Me Kelso. ITSMEKELSO.
Yeah, so follow Kelso on Instagram at It's Me Kelso. And I think that's all. Yeah, thanks you guys. First of all, let's thank our panel, Han and Jack.
Thank you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank
Really
you.
nice talk.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.